Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 305. I am your host, Holly Felmuth, and joining me tonight, we have Harrison Milfeld.
How's it going, everybody?
And unfortunately, Lewis was unable to make it tonight. We're not exactly sure why, but it is pretty late.
It's most likely he fell asleep, probably on this one. He had mentioned to us getting this thing started probably this day, but obviously with the time zone with him across the pond, he needs to, he really needs to catch his sleep on there. Obviously, you know, being married and everything, so.
Yeah, so we certainly don't bear him any ill will or anything like that. So tonight we are going to be going through a two-part structure, kind of a shorter episode again tonight. The first section that we have is what we've been playing. And our second section will be Nintendo News, and we're kind of just skipping the feature section just for tonight. So as far as what we've been playing, Harrison, would you like to begin?
Yes, I finally finished Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze last week, just as far as the talk about the overall experience right now is that it was, you know, quite enjoyable as what I've had and what I've expected probably from another sequel from retros, like, you know, Donkey Kong Country series or its revival of it. The last boss, without giving up too much away, was, you know, it seems like when you get with these several bosses on there, again, they increase with difficulty, and yet they're very, they go past the whole, like, oh, hit them three times as far as structure and beat them, what we've seen in past Donkey Kong Country titles, like with Rare. And in this case, it kind of goes up to at least, you know, either six hits or even nine hits, who knows, as far as to defeat them. And, of course, you know, they have a pattern, and this is what happened with the last boss, especially, where once I finally got the pattern down after about the 20th try, you know, I was able to, just to actually finally beat this thing on here. But I applaud, you know, Retro for doing pretty well, for doing something really well on this, and to actually, you know, delve a little bit more deeper into my love of platformers a bit right now. I mean, I haven't gone back to do any of the the extra stuff, collect all the con letters, the puzzle pieces, and so not to unlock the final area. I mean, there's six areas in total for straight through, and I believe there is a seventh unlockable world that you have to go through. I mean, aside from that, you know, Retro puts in, you know, David Wise's soundtrack on there, like, you know, sound bites and everything that you can unlock, and dioramas, and concept art. So, I mean, kind of tip the iceberg on that right now. But, for Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, it's obviously a nice another entry that we've had for Retro. But, that's what I've been kind of going right now. I mean, that's shortest thing I had, and as far as how much I liked it, I really did enjoy every single bit of it, be it the music, the atmosphere, and even level design that Retro put together.
My big thing, I've probably mentioned it before, but I did not like Returns on the Wii very much, and so that's kind of why I skipped out on Tropical Freeze. My thing with Returns for the Wii is that it was just frustrating to me. I mean, I know that it's meant to be challenging, that's kind of the thing, and Tropical Freeze is probably challenging, kind of in the same way, but it was just frustrating in a way that I did not like very much. I mean, I can handle challenging games, but it's just kind of the brand of challenge that was in Returns, like those rocket barrel levels, they drove me crazy. I mean, you'd get slipped up by the same thing every single time, and say you have like 30 seconds worth of rocket barrel level that you're pretty much an expert at, but then you just kind of get caught up at the same with the same mistake again and again and again, and so you have to do that 30 seconds that you've pretty much mastered over and over again, and I didn't like
that. Well, the thing is with that, whatever, I mean, it's a game that is as hard as it is, it doesn't punish you for as much, like, punish you as like many games out there. I mean, it has its difficulty to, you know, branch out everything. Like, its difficulty is a little bit branched out, but, you know, it doesn't punish you overly bad as far as, like, when you fall. I mean, you're given so many opportunities for extra lives to actually, you know, complete, like, that sequence that you're just, one player is just kind of screwing up on constantly, like I did. And it, okay. Yeah, but it's just, There were a lot on there. I mean, like I said last week, there was a point where I went from 50 lives down to 25 in a span of, like, 30 minutes. And I didn't realize at that point, I'm like, oh, I need to stock up on lives for the last world right now. So, go back to other ones and just stock up as quickly as possible, or use the Kong Pow power, whatever, which is basically you push both the shoulder buttons if you have two Kongs, and if there's a meter up there that's filled up, I believe, after defeating enemies, each enemy on screen turns into a balloon, so you can grab each one of those and stock up on your lives a bit. But, you know, it's yeah, I can understand what you're saying to do.
So, am I right in thinking that there is no Super Kong or whatever that thing was called in Donkey Kong Country Returns? Like, is there a Super Kong or...
No. No, there is not, like a Super Mario or, like, a Super Sonic, like, ability you're saying, like, esque?
Well, kind of the... Well, what... I think there was a Mario game, maybe a new Super Mario Bros. Game, that had, like, the Super Guide, where basically if you failed enough times, it would, like, just kind of show you how to play it. And you could, like, end that at any time. And they did the same thing for Donkey Kong Country Returns. Like, if you fail a level enough, like, Super Kong comes on and he basically just does it for you. You can take control at any time, so if you're having trouble with just one spot, you can just let Super Kong take you through that spot and then take control again. Do you remember that from Returns?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I do. I do. No, this one does not make a return to, no pun intended, to Tropical Freeze.
Okay, so is the Kong Pow, is it kind of a replacement for that, for players who are having troubles?
Yes, that's essentially it. But there's no sign of, like, a super, a super guide that we'd seen in the new Super Mario Brothers titles from the Wii era, or even, like the white Tanuki suit we saw in Super Mario 3D World. This one, it's just, it's a meter that, and you can only access it if you have two Kongs. The meter will stay still full, but you can't use it if you're just Donkey Kong himself. Like, you're just by, you only have one Kong.
Okay, so in that sense, the game is actually maybe a little more challenging.
Oh yeah, it is. And anytime when you see those kind of things, like I saw in the new Super Mario Brothers title, like the Super Guide, or even the white Tanuki suit, it just... It's one of the things that just tries to mock you in a level like that because you don't want to use it, because you know that's used for the people on there that are generally not, like, really novice at games like that. And in the case of this one, I only use it if it's the point I'm trying to complete a level, but if I'm a completionist trying to get, like, a green star or anything like that in Mario 3D World, I won't use it because it counts against you if you beat the level with a white Tanuki suit. And the same way when you were the Super Con in Returns, it kind of counts against you as far as when it does it, so,
Yeah, with the Super Kong in Donkey Kong Country Returns, I don't think that... I mean, you could get through, like, all the levels if you wanted with the Super Kong, but it wouldn't count any of those levels as actually completed, so... And it's kind of like a slap in the face to those of us who don't want to use silly methods like that. Like, if you're playing Mario 3D World and the white Tanuki suit's there, and it's just like, oh, man... I don't know, it just makes me kind of mad. If it weren't there, then I don't know, maybe I'd be a little happier, but I do, when I'm playing with my little sister, sometimes if I'm getting a little frustrated just because she's, you know, not that experienced, I'll actually resort to using the white Tanuki leaf just to get through the level. So I'm kind of mixed on those special items that basically beat the game for you.
Well, this is a little bit unprecedented right now, but in a stunning turn of events, Lewis has actually finally showed up to the podcast, kids. So, say hello, Lewis.
Hello, everyone. I didn't actually fall asleep. There's been a slight lapse in daylight savings over here and overseas, as it were. And that's my excuse for not turning up on time.
Yeah, because ours happened 2 weeks ago, and yours is, like you said, not until another week or so.
Yeah, that's correct.
So we'll be in sync by then.
Exactly, yeah. I was still preparing show notes while you guys had already started the show.
So yes, yeah. This will be the Weenit edition of Infendo Radio. But but you know, I think we can just move on. I mean, between either you or Holly, whatever. What have you guys been playing?
I think Lewis should go first. So go ahead, Lewis. What have you been playing recently?
I feel there may be some overlap now in what Harrison just said, but I've also recently beat Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. And when I say recently, I'm talking in the last couple of hours.
Oh, I mine was last week as well, so it just what did you think?
So it's very, very fresh in my memory. Just curious though, Harrison, before I go into my thoughts here, how long did the last boss take you?
Well, as I mentioned, it took me about 15, 20 times, and that was
Okay.
mostly like I would die like just well, I would end up dying probably by like the last form. Well, I wouldn't say the last form of the boss. The boss stays the same form. It just its third portion of the boss when you had to hit him 3 times, because this one you had to hit 9 times to defeat.
Yeah.
I was in that last portion, and I would lose either Diddy, Cranky, or Dixie, whatever, and then I'd be like, "Well, I can't do much without an extra jump when I'm trying to do all this." But there's so many instances on there where it's like one hit kills.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I thought was quite frustrating about that boss battle, was there were some bits where you could just get one hit killed, where it's normally the equivalent of, falling through the bottom of the level. However, it just seems a bit unfair that you have this kind of health system and you get knocked back by the enemy and you lose some health, but if you kind of misstep in that particular way and you go off the stage and it's at that part of the boss battle, it's very similar to being hit by the boss itself and just to be one hit killed because you've technically, fallen off or you've hit a hazard, as it were. And it just seemed a bit unfair, especially if you were doing really well and you had, full lives up to that point. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're dead. But so that boss battle took me hours, I think. However, completing it was a triumphant moment, and the game itself is absolutely amazing. I was very impressed with the last couple of worlds as well. They were very imaginative and lots of very cool challenges. And it's a very, very hard game, at least in my opinion. But
Yeah, and well, I was mentioning with Holly that this is not a game that, yes, it has difficult it is, it doesn't punish you as much. I mean, it gives you at least, well, what I say, like it gives you the point whatever, when you're having a difficult point at like, well, a difficult bit at one point in the game, is that, yeah, you're given multiple tries, but it's just the life system where you're just with all your stock of like balloons where you can actually kind of repeat it, whatever. I mean, like I said, that I was telling her, Holly, that there was a point when I went from 50 lives down to 25 in a span of 30 minutes.
yeah, no, I had a few of those moments as well throughout the game, and I actually found that the shop came in quite useful for some particularly some stages which were giving me trouble. If I jumped in that shop and bought, the extra health container for a level, or actually, I think that was the most useful one, and I guess any of the levels where you're in the rocket or a I didn't have that so much trouble in the minecart ones, but some of those rocket ones were a real pain, especially towards the end of the game, and having that extra, technically that kind of heart container for that as well, was useful in some of those. However, even though this game has kind of, punished me in some way, I kind of want to jump back on the certain levels and collect either the Kong letters or the puzzle pieces, and maybe even try out some of that online. The high score ranking stuff. Because I've kind of glossed over all that and just tried to get to the end of the level each time so far.
That's how I did as well. But I mean, like about halfway through, I was like, okay, that's it. I'm just voting on puzzle pieces, all the con letters, or I'll get them whenever it's a convenience. And I mean, I'm putting the game to a side right now to move on to other games at the moment. But this one, it's just I'm interested to see what the extra levels or features that are, or special things that they have in the game to actually have.
Yeah, I have heard they do have some nice bonuses if you can go through the trials, as it were, of getting Kong letters and getting the puzzle pieces. And I was curious about these extra things, so I started playing back through World 1 as soon as I kind of beat the game, just because I was kind of so relieved I managed to beat that boss. And just because I had been stuck in it so long, I just wanted to do like a level or two. And it was quite nice to see how different I was playing those early levels and those early stages, just because of the skills you pick up throughout the game itself and how you kind of learn to look for certain items in certain places, and you can just kind of blaze your way through. You're doing a lot more, you know, rolls and, you know, the kind of the roll jumps. And yeah, I was just going through the first couple of stages and I was finding the Kong pieces. I didn't find all of the puzzle pieces in any of them on those kind of retrials, so they're definitely well hidden. But yeah, this is a really lovely crafted game, and anyone on the fence of this, I would definitely recommend it.
Did you notice, I think, what was it? It was the last world when you're on the rocket barrel, one of the last few rocket barrel, the last rocket barrel one, and you come across one of the bosses, mini bosses from Returns, and they're frozen in ice.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yes, I looked there, I was like, that looks familiar, and I'm just like kind of fixated on that, trying to figure out, not paying attention to what's in front of me. I was like, oh, that's a boss I fought in the last one, and then dead.
Yep, that, by distraction, that killed me a few times. Especially because it's frozen in the background to start with, and then its eyes kind of shoot open and start looking at you. It's the most distracting thing ever, especially when you're in that rocket and you need to look at where you're going. And I think they deliberately put that in to troll you, because there's like a few little rocks kind of coming up right after him, which you need to kind of carefully go in between.
I wonder if there's any Metroid references in there as all, like they did in Returns.
That's a good point. I can't say I saw any, but I definitely wouldn't be surprised if there was.
You guys, I know I haven't played this game, but I actually do know something that you don't. There is at least one Metroid reference.
Ooh, you tell.
Someone posted it in a screenshot, just one of the people who I follow, and I found it kind of intriguing. They're just like, can you see, what's Samus's airship's name? Does it have a name?
It's just a gunship, or I don't think it has an official name.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well,
I feel it does, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
There's actually a level, I have no idea which one, where that's just kind of camouflaged in the background. It's there, but it's kind of tough to see, and I saw a little screenshot with that. It might have been a bit of a spoiler for me, but I don't think I'm going to be getting Tropical Freeze anytime soon. So it was kind of interesting.
That's okay.
So there's my contribution to this. I kind of feel like I'm reliving my very first episode of Infendo Radio again, because during that episode, Harrison talked a lot about Pikmin 3, and I had never even played a Pikmin game, so I just kind of sat and listened and enjoyed, but I didn't have a lot to add. Anyway, do you guys have any other final thoughts on Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze?
Only final thoughts that come to mind for me is that the game impressed me a lot. I think I've got a better impression than I thought I would have, having completed the game now. I thought it might have been a bit too similar to the previous game, but whether it's just the level design, or I'm not sure quite what, or maybe it's the new music compositions, and as it were. But I thoroughly enjoyed going through that game, and I feel it's something that I may jump back into as well.
Okay.
I think that's one thing I liked about it, was David Wise's composition, though. And I really hope that's kind of released at some point. I mean, when they redid Aquatic Ambience on there, all the memories kept coming flowing back to me.
And I think like the music gets better and better as you get through that game as well. I think it gets a bit more, I'm not sure complex is the right word, but I think it kind of strays slightly outside of the norm on the kind of the second half of the game, or some of the music for some of the stages. And yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. I would also appreciate a soundtrack from this game.
Well, I did YouTube some of the music, because I do like music. I'm glad I can enjoy the music without having to buy the game, though, because the more you guys talk about it, the more I honestly think that I probably would not like it that much, unfortunately.
There have been many expletive-laden moments where I would die, and yeah, I'm sure this would take... It's not up there as far as Rayman hard, but it will test your patience.
Actually, I don't know. I think I felt this was harder than Rayman.
Really?
Yeah. Then again, I was playing Rayman co-op, and I was playing this single. So maybe there's something to that. But well, kind of on that note, actually, I kind of appreciate that Nintendo has stuck to the guns and made and kept this the tricky platformer instead of kind of dumbing it down, which a lot of franchises have done in the you know kind of the recent generations. It's good that it is kind of just a balls out hard platformer opposed to it just being put aside to either a hard mode and being defaulted to something a lot easier. It's quite refreshing to actually go through a really challenging game nowadays.
Well, this is going to be anything but smooth, but I guess now I'll kind of talk about what I've been playing. And I told Harrison what I've been playing, but I haven't told you, Lewis. I have been playing Swords and Soldiers 3D. So Swords and Soldiers was originally... That is like a real tongue twister. Every single time I say it, I kind of stumble over it.
Swords and Soldiers, it's hard.
Anyway, the original, it was actually originally released for the Wii, for WiiWare. It was a WiiWare title, so downloadable on the Wii. It was later ported to the Nintendo 3DS, PC, PlayStation 3, mobile things. But it's a side-scrolling real-time strategy game. And prior to playing this game, my whole experience basically with real-time strategy games was Warcraft 2, which I played a lot when I was little. I loved that game. I don't know why. But real-time strategy games, they can be a little addicting like that. And then later on, I played a lot of Age of Mythology, which is kind of a spin-off from the Age of Empires series. So just a quick question. What are you guys' experiences with real-time strategy games? If anything?
Aside from StarCraft and Warcraft and the occasional Fire Emblem and Advance Wars, that's just it.
Yeah. So, a side-scrolling real-time strategy game, I didn't...
It's a side-scroller?
Yeah. I kind of wondered how that would work. But, Lewis, you sound like you have an idea, a thought.
Oh, sorry. No, I was going to add into kind of my background, but it's quite small, really. In terms of real-time strategy, I played a bit of Command & Conquer back in the day, but it's a genre which has kind of eluded me, and it's kind of the reason why I really liked Pikmin when that first came around, because it was like, oh, this is a strategy game I can get into. But now, I'll let you get on, because this a side view real-time strategy game is not one I've played before, and that sounds quite intriguing.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are actually familiar-ish with this genre, because I think there are a lot of just free online games that you can play that are kind of in the same vein. But basically, you have a base, and it's typically on the far left side of the screen. You like will start with some gold diggers. In most real-time strategy games, you have gold plus maybe lumber and maybe a couple of other resources that you collect. In this game, there's really only gold that you have to collect. There's also mana, which is like magic power, but you don't have to like task villagers or whatever with collecting mana. Mana just kind of builds up on its own. So you kind of want to start out every mission with some gold diggers, and they just kind of start in your base, and they just kind of move to the side. You know, it's a side-scroller, so they're just kind of moving to the side. They just go to the first gold mine that they can find and start mining gold. As you collect some gold, you can pay for upgrades that allow you to train like fighting units, and those will cost more gold to train them anyway. And when you train a fighter, he just kind of starts walking on his own. You can't actually control their movement, but he just starts walking to the side and just keeps going until he hits something or someone to attack. And so that's kind of how the combat works. You can train multiple types of units and things like that. More upgrades become available that you have to pay for. Some upgrades allow you to heal and to use other kinds of magic using mana, which I mentioned before. In the 3D version of the game, because I never played the original on WiiWare or on any other platform, so this is just the 3DS version of this game. The whole thing is controlled on the touchscreen, and the action takes place on the top screen. So it's kind of like your stylus is the cursor, and that's how you control basically everything. There are three different civilizations in the game, and they each have their own campaign. I actually haven't gotten past Vikings. Vikings is kind of the first campaign, and then you get Aztec and the Chinese. So those are probably a little different, although I don't know how. Like the Aztec and the Chinese, they might be a little different from the Vikings. But I wouldn't be sure because all I have played so far are Vikings. The 3DS version of this game, like I mentioned, I didn't play the WiiWare version or any other version, but the 3DS port seems a little lazy to me. Just graphics-wise, and sometimes the touch screen doesn't seem all that responsive. Like, I feel like I have to touch really hard sometimes to get things to work. But it is a really, really fun game, just like a real-time strategy game should be. It's very addicting. It's actually quite action-packed and quite funny as well. In the Viking campaign, anyway, you are kind of controlling Redbeard, whose grill, which is like the biggest grill in the world, has been stolen by Blackbeard. And so you just have to reclaim it, doing all these missions. You run into these crazy natives, and you just are wanting to get that giant grill back so that you can continue cooking your fantastic meat.
That's a good story.
Yeah. It certainly has a lot of humor to it, for sure. I don't know about the Aztec and the Chinese, but I'm sure that they have similarly humorous stories. But just kind of in conclusion, after playing this game, I'm absolutely thrilled about the sequel, which is coming out exclusively for the Wii U at some point. I don't think it has like a firm release time frame yet, but I would kind of expect it to come out sometime before the end of 2014. And I'm just super excited about it. I mean, they're going to be possibly adding like a whole new campaign. In fact, I think they are. And you know, just other improvements. HD graphics, I think, is going to be really awesome. And whether or not people decide to, you know, go back and try the original, I think that everyone should be looking forward to Swords and Soldiers 2 for the Wii U. So that's kind of just all I got on the game so far.
No, it's good to hear about the original, really, because I was intrigued when I saw the trailer for Swords and Soldiers 2. Because, it's a Wii U exclusive, and we don't see many of those, especially third-party ones. And, from what I saw of the trailer, it had these really nice 2D graphics, had a lot of kind of units on the screen at one time, had some good charm to it. So it's good to hear that the gameplay will be there to back it up as well.
Yeah.
It'd be also interesting if it had some sort of online mode to it. But yeah, just the fact that it's an exclusive Wii U game, which makes takes advantage of the unique controls with the two screens and the touchscreen. Yeah, my interest in this game's kind of shot up hearing your impressions from the original.
Yes, that is what I want. I want everyone to listen to this and everyone to get excited about Swords and Soldiers 2. It's going to be good. But with that, I think it's about time to move on to Nintendo news. I'm just going to start out with kind of my favorite piece of news. I'm going to steal it from you guys. There's a new Kickstarter campaign going on. It's just called NES. Let me see. I've got the page pulled up here. The first in a trilogy of Nintendo albums arranged in the style of synth-infused live jazz. So basically, the Kickstarter is asking for $10,000, and I guess that kind of seems like a lot to some people, but you can go to the Kickstarter page and kind of see the breakdown of where the money is going, and it'll make a lot more sense when you see that. But it's just music, I guess. That's the first kind of thing that comes into my mind, and I love music. some of the songs on the track list I can read out for you. Level 1 of Super Mario Bros. 2. These are all NES games. The DuckTales Moon level. That should be very awesome. There's Mega Man 2, the Airman level. So some really great sounding songs, I think, that will definitely sound interesting, kind of in a jazz style. So I definitely recommend looking this up and backing it. I've already backed it, and I'm really thrilled for it. I think it needs a little bit more support. And I would love to see it, you know, reach its goals and come to fruition. So do you guys have any thoughts on this? Any questions, even?
I've just been looking over the page itself, really, and because, yeah, I was one of the people who was a bit almost concerned, as it were, with the amount of money needed to fund this. But yeah, just going over the breakdown now, and you are completely right. It does make a bit more sense once it's explained. It is nice to see it there. It goes over some the fees of the different musicians involved in the mixing process, but also things like licensing and distribution, actually getting the correct rights to these original pieces and being able to create the music out of it. And so yeah, it's good just to see that that was all taken care of, as it were. But yeah, I mean, it is a very interesting project here. It seems to have a pretty good has a very good kind of history in music here. I'm going down. The actual song choices themselves, though, are quite interesting. So they're all games from the NES generation, but they may not be the ones you would necessarily think are ones which come to mind. For example, we have it. It all seems to be kind of like games from maybe not the most popular of that series on the NES. For example, we the track which is kind of honouring or supporting Mario is Super Mario Bros. 2, and the track for Zelda is from Zelda 2. So it looks like there has been a lot of thought putting into which tracks, and not just having, you know, the main theme from each franchise.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I found the track list very interesting too. Like, probably the most well-known and popular song on there that I can see is the Moon Level from DuckTales, which is a very, very awesome song. If you haven't heard it, go look that one up. So.
And I also like the representation for Star Tropics as well. It's not always the one you see at the top of the list, is it?
I know, it's a series that needs to be get a remake soon.
All right. So moving on, we've got a bit of a list of news items, but I'm just going to ask you, Lewis, to pick your favorite news item and tell us a little bit about that.
I think you all know which this is going to be. I just need to find the actual exact details here. However,
Infendo Radio, the Weenit edition.
Indeed. I just heard about this piece of news just a few hours ago, really, and it was a tweet from Nintendo of Europe. And they confirmed one of the first Game Boy Advance titles which will come to the Wii U emulator, as it were, next week is going to be Advance Wars, the original Game Boy Advance game. And that's just made me very, very happy. I know when the discussion of the Game Boy Advance games came up, it was a game I was championing would hopefully come over to the West soon, because Japan had the odd combo title with both, what you know, Advance Wars 1 and Advance Wars 2 on a single ROM, as it were. They're having that for launch. But it is great to see that at least Europe is also getting some Advance Wars love, and hopefully it's going to be the same for America and the other regions as well. But I just think Advance Wars is going to be one of those perfect Game Boy games to play on the TV or on the gamepads and have it kind of a pass to play for the multiplayer. I think that's going to be really great.
It's a great way to kind of kick off the service, because it's going to be the first one to be released in Europe.
And it's a game that I wish was on the 3DS, too. Not only just that as a virtual console title, but I was mentioning on Twitter to a bunch of my friends, my followers, like, you know, how awesome would it be just to have this on the 3DS, another version of this? I know Intelligent Systems is, they obviously had the year off, whatever, from making Fire Emblem Awakening. It's this would just seem so really well to put on there. I mean, possibilities are endless for what they can do with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact that this is coming up is a good sign that, you know, they, depending on how well this game is downloaded, if they're not already making an Advance Wars game for the 3DS, maybe this will encourage them to. If they see overwhelming support for the different regions for Advance Wars, then they can tell if there is still popularity in this series, and they can fund the money into creating a project like they did with Awakening. But yeah, this news has me very excited, especially as it comes out next week, as it were. And as you were saying, Holly, it's good to see that this is one of the launch titles, because it is a very meaty game. What I find sometimes when Nintendo launches their virtual console services, the games they initially put out are kind of a bit shallow. They're games which you can't get a huge amount of time out of, and they're just kind of more so reliant on their nostalgia, where this is a game you could pour a huge amount of time into. And so hopefully Nintendo this is a sign that they're going to go straight for, you know, the really gold Game Boy Advance games, which people really want, and just give people what they want, which seems like a strange idea, but it's something they can do. They have the power.
They do have the power. I wonder if it is Nintendo power. but this has only been confirmed for Europe, correct?
Yeah, it's correct so far. Well, we also know that it's coming out in Japan, on the Japan service, as it were, but it's not confirmed for America yet.
Ha! Nintendo of America needs to step it up, I feel like.
I feel the same.
I never actually played the original Advance. In fact, I've never played an Advance Wars game.
The first one surprised me. I mean, it was I got it for. I not even asked for it for my birthday. I just got it at a random. And since then, that was a game I would just like play on my bus rides when I was like playing like varsity soccer in high school, and I would just like be in the back, whatever, just immersed basically in the game for basically hours on end to like the bus ride there and the bus ride back. And yet, like Fire Emblem, it did get really difficult near the end, and I don't think I ever did finish it.
Oh yeah, the Advance Wars games get very tricky near the end, and I've beaten them all except from the most recent one, which is a bit ironic, which is where they went a bit dark with the series, believe it or not, and I kind of lost all interest because the story wasn't fun, didn't pull me in. But it is great to see this returning, and what I would say, Holly, if you haven't played Advance Wars, obviously you like Fire Emblem quite a bit. And it's kind of just a more balanced, not in terms of Fire Emblem is unbalanced, but the fact that because you don't level up your characters and such, you can play it like a multiplayer game as a game of skill, opposed to it depending on a game of how many hours you've poured into it. And it's more so like a game of chess, which is a bit weird to compare it to, but it's a very cool game.
Yeah, I'm really interested
and
in it.
Hopefully it will come over there. Yeah.
If nothing else, you know. I think, well, if it comes, I mean, this is for Europe, and so I guess it hasn't been confirmed for the United States. So I could either, you know, like, try and get a used copy for my Game Boy now, or wait to see whether it comes out on Virtual Console. I guess I'll kind of decide, but I am very interested in it, for sure.
That's cool.
So with that, it's Harrison's turn to pick a favorite article, or just kind of a news story that you really want to talk about.
Yeah, this one I think is just a little bit short to talk about, but, and I'm not sure if these are available in Europe for you, Lewis, but, Redbox is now offering Wii U game rentals starting actually today at the recording of this podcast right now on March 25th.
I don't believe that affects me.
No, you're not familiar with Redbox?
No, not really.
Well, just the long story, just the Clip Notes version of this is, it's just basically a rental service that's in a key, like a rental kiosk service, whatever, which started out as just, you know, you rent movies. It just was movies at first, but now they branched out in the games about 2-3 years ago or so, where at first where you can just rent a movie for $1 a day. And if you were, you know, late per day, whatever, it would just added a dollar of, like, fee to it. But since then, they've increased the charges by, like, 30 cents. So it's, like, $1.30. And games are about, like, I think $2 for a day or so. But, yeah, right now, it's just... Which is kind of odd for me right now because I never rent from them because I can't do that because I don't feel like putting as much game... Like, renting it for, like, 5 days in it on end just for $12 when I could just have the game itself without having to worry about fees. But this one, it's just... I don't know. I mean, does this change your factor or anything like that to rent from Redbox, or do you just, to anybody else, just stick to Gamefly?
I don't rent games from Redbox. I mean, I use it a lot for movies, but the selection of games just tends to not be that great, honestly. And I'm actually looking at the list for my closest Redbox. And there aren't any Wii U games yet. Maybe that's because I'm kind of in a remote type of location. But, you know, none of the games are all that great. There's a lot of Wii games. There's Mario Kart Wii. That's not half bad. And then there's Just Dance 14. Or 2014, sorry.
Jeez.
And, yeah, I don't play a lot of Just Dance, but I have bought a couple of games to play with my sister because she really likes to do that with me. But yeah, Redbox is probably not going to be something I use for Wii U games a lot, unless they start getting some good games in there, and if I have like a whole day to dedicate, because you know, you're paying like a couple of bucks per day of the rental, so if I have like a whole day to spend on one game, then yeah, maybe I'll get a game from there, if there's any good ones, so not a huge likelihood that I'll be using Redbox for game rentals anytime soon.
For anybody who's cash-strapped, there you go. But unless if you are some of those weirdos out there that like to finish game... Well, I'm not... Sorry, that's derogatory. If you're like one of those people that just finishes games in 2 days, this is for you then, so...
Yeah. You know, sometimes you have a day off, but I don't know. There's only a certain...
I don't have days off. I practically work every day. I don't even know what a weekend is anymore.
Dang. Well, one of these days, you'll get a day off. But the thing is, it takes a very, very special type of game to keep me playing for, you know, a whole day. That would be kind of insane. Maybe a few hours at a time, like Xenoblade Chronicles. I could play that all day. But, like I said, I don't know if their selection is going to be any kind of good. So, we'll just have to see. Any other thoughts on that, though?
I think the selection they had there, I think it was, well... Tropical Freeze and Super Mario 3D World are the selection so far.
Wow, that's not bad. I wish that Tropical Freeze was available in my Redbox. That would be a really nice way to kind of try out the game and see if it's for me. So that would be really nice.
There you go.
I'll have to keep my eyes open. All right, and with that, I guess it's my turn to pick another news story. I'm just kind of looking over these. Okay, Nintendo is skipping out on PAX East 2014. And honestly, I don't know very much about this, so I'm just going to hand it over to Harrison to kind of explain about this.
Yes, well, like I was telling you before the podcast, whatever, and everybody that I know, with PAX East in Boston, whatever, this year, not only Nintendo, but Sony is skipping out on this convention, which is... I believe happening the end of this week or end of this month, I believe. But it's I feel like this is, it doesn't hurt them, but I feel like this would have been a good opportunity to kind of showcase Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, that does sound like kind of a missed opportunity.
Not only that, I mean, have like a huge Mario Kart 8 tournament or something like that. Anything that like just to kind of, because the game's coming out fairly soon, or maybe later on that. This is one, obviously, I mean, we have, you know, E3 coming up, whatever, Nintendo, their own big guns coming up, and I mean, not to kind of spoil everything for us, like, right out the front gate, but, this one, it's just, you know, I can understand why they're skipping out, whatever, because, you know, like I said, they're saving everything else for it.
I don't know, I'm a bit confused by this announcement, really, because... I could be wrong, but I was under the assumption that for Nintendo, PAX East, as it were, wouldn't be a huge... it wouldn't cost a huge amount of money to go along there and to represent themselves compared to a lot of the other shows that they do turn up to. And the fact that then kind of last year, obviously they played E3 down a lot. Their actual presentation was broadcast as opposed to at the show itself. I was kind of hoping there would be more of these types of events that we would be seeing Nintendo pop out, just so they could actually kind of get face to face with the consumers, show them their, you know, their weird and wacky consoles that you need to get your hands on to kind of really enjoy, you know, to see the 3D effect on the 3DS, to, you know, see the two screens working on the Wii U itself and the unique gameplay you get out of that. So yeah, I feel it's a real shame that they're not turning up for this year. And I hope they do have a good reason for it. I do hope they have this plan of either these other events are going to, or maybe they are going to have this big blowout E3, or maybe they're just they've got some really really interesting things to say on their next Nintendo Direct, which is, you know, who knows when that's going to be? Maybe just right round the corner, and maybe they're just channeling their news that way. But it's a shame that if that is the case, that they're not using these opportunities to get people to just play their games.
Yeah, given the state of the Wii U, obviously, it just you would think probably. I mean, but then again, would you think that this year's E3, like we said, kind of last year, is another make or break session for Nintendo?
Exactly, but I do see them as like very different types of events, as it were, because obviously E3, I guess, is meant to at least be for the press. And it's where the press go to find out what's happening in the game industry and report it, as it were, in their own avenues. Where PAX East, as it were, or PAX in general, is where just general gamers and consumers go, and they kind of get like that grassroots scene, and they can talk about it on their blogs or just on Twitter with their friends, and they just get that general, you know, mouth-to-mouth marketing, as it were. And just kind of a general, it's kind of just keeping up appearances, and it's just good faith and goodwill, as it were, turning up to these things and letting the actual gamers play these demos, which they normally trot out to the big shows. And I think it's a real shame, really.
Yeah, and it's also surprising that Sony's skipping on it as well, though.
I don't think it affects Sony so much. I do feel Nintendo's in a position where they need to seek every opportunity they can to get people to play their stuff, just because they do things, you know, out of the norm. I mean, it's very easy for Sony to do a big TV advertising campaign and show what's good about the PS4, and which is basically just showing off a load of footage of it because it looks good, and watching that as a TV commercial works. It's very simple. You can see that it looks good, whereas Nintendo's doing a very different approach, and it plays uniquely and it plays good, and that's not as well delivered, as it were, for a simple TV advert or a paper advert, as it were. So I feel they need to be doing even more of these events as opposed to be cutting down.
What you're saying is they need to bring back Space World, which has been my wish for like the last 10 years.
True. Oh, well, just that and more. I think they should be, if not just going to the big ones, but trying to seek any sort of small event as possible, because I can't imagine, even combined, that it would cost Nintendo a huge amount of money to go to all these different events, these smaller ones, throughout the year. But it would just keep the Nintendo brand alive, as it were, amongst people. So yeah, it is a shame, but you never know, they may have a grand plan yet that they've yet to reveal, so hopefully that is the case.
Well, I kind of agree with you guys. I'm quite disappointed as well. And actually, reading this article that I have pulled up here, it says Nintendo of America has always had a presence at PAX East.
Yeah.
And it also actually has a quote from Nintendo of America that says, "Interacting directly with our fans and letting them play our games firsthand is a key component of our approach." And I mean, it's like you say, Lewis, this is a big thing where, you know, people can come and actually experience the game firsthand. So it's like, if that's a key component of Nintendo of America's approach, then I don't know what they plan on doing. They do say They continue to say in this quote, "That doesn't include PAX East this year, but we will offer our fans a variety of opportunities to get their hands on Nintendo products in 2014. Keep an eye on our social media pages for more information about where we'll be and what you can play." So they're kind of just confining it. They say our social media pages. It's like, oh, okay. I guess everyone can, you know, look at Facebook and Twitter and things like that, but it would just be really nice if Nintendo had a presence at these kinds of things. And I don't know, to me this almost preludes another E3 that is similar to last year's E3. Like, they don't want to make the effort to be a presence and to actually, you know, be there. So maybe they're gonna go the same route this year for E3 that they did last year.
I'm under the belief that they will go back to another press, like, you know, a big press conference. I really do think they want to do that again. Maybe we'll see more a second side to it, whatever, instead of like a developers conference like we'd see after their press conference. Maybe a 3DS-centric Nintendo Direct that comes out probably during that.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think that they are going to switch back, but I don't know. They just, in some ways, seem almost like they're getting lazy with these kinds of things, especially in North America, I feel like. But moving on. Lewis, was there any other news stories that you kind of liked and would like to discuss, possibly?
Well, I only see one more on my list.
Yeah.
So I'll go with that one. I have a story here. That's a weird introduction. The last news story we have here is about Peter Molyneux stating that he believes the indie scene that is currently very popular is basically a craze, and it will only be in a few years' time, and then we're seeing all these kind of indie projects start disappearing. It definitely won't be the boom that it currently is. There is a couple of quotes here from Peter Molyneux. The first one is, "These things go in cycles. What I'd say is, enjoy this time, but it won't last. Don't think we're going to be all indies for the next 5 years. For this typo on this website I'm reading. The way things go in cycles, just like in the music business, you have a time where punk is big, and then you have a time like now where everything is manufactured. Enjoy this time, because inevitably it will only be for a short period." So, to cut this one short, basically Peter's prediction is that come the next generation, the indie scene will basically kind of fall in the background, kind of how it was, I guess, technically in last generation. It's just going to be a small part of the industry. It's going to be kind of put into a corner, like the Xbox Live, was it indie scene, opposed to being in the regular marketplace. Now, I kind of disagree with his thoughts here. The way I see it is that if not the indie scene's going to grow even more so, I think the big companies, Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony, have all kind of had this real sharp awakening, and they've realized how important these smaller companies and these smaller developers can be, especially in the boom of things like the mobile industry, the iPhone and Android and so on and so forth. That scene's not dying down anytime soon by the sounds of it, and I don't see why the same won't be for the gaming industry. If anything, I think the indie scene has become an even bigger and more popular role in mainstream consoles, and we may even get to a time where we'll be seeing indie games coming out on physical releases alongside big releases as well. But just from success stories we've seen for the last, you know, 5 or so years, I think the indie scene will be around for a long time. And it's because they also have different avenues like Kickstarter as well to fund their projects. I do think this scene is going to be sticking around for a long time. Yourself, Harrison or Holly?
Coming from Peter Mullen, who is a respected, developer and figure in the industry, also a guy that I like to get a lot of flack to because he tends to hype up even his own titles, yet they're nowhere near to the point where he first described them. I mean, one example was, Fable, saying it was going to be the greatest RPG of all time, yet it's still a good game in essence, but yet didn't live up to the promise of what he had stated in the game's development. Now, with as far as Molyneux, like when he's saying how indies are just another trend that's going to go away, I mean, I don't see that because these are developers out there that, again, are not constrained by, big name, the majority of them aren't constrained by the majority of, big name publishers. So you get a little more of that leeway for them to actually, experiment there. And I feel like that's where we get a lot of experimentation with these indie titles. And unless we see the bigger AAA titles doing that, I feel like there's still a place for the indie titles to do that.
No, I totally agree. It also seems strange because, obviously, Peter Molyneux has created his own, what he was calling his own small company. The name is lapsing here, but... but yeah, it just seems it's almost contradictory, his statements here, him saying that he doesn't believe in the indie scene, as it were, will stick around. However, I do completely respect his opinion, and you never know. It's the sort of unforeseeable thing that could happen in the future. It might be that the indie scene kind of explodes into a unmanageable state on these consoles, if the number of releases start to rival such as smartphones, and we start having thousands of indie games for all the big platforms, and you just can't even find the big title releases in the mess of all these Angry Bird clones and all this other mess, that maybe there's some truth in there. Maybe the big name brands will kind of step in and go, this clearly isn't working. We need to have these clear divides. We need to kind of put these restrictions in place. Start bringing back some of the older barriers. You need to buy a dev kit, and it's going to have to cost this amount of money. And you can only release a certain amount of games, or you have to go through this process of approval, and we need to verify your content beforehand and all this. You never know. That could, in fact, be a possible future. But I'm hoping that the industry will find some middle ground where cool, unique indie games and the big releases can kind of sit side by side.
Yeah. And moving on, I think Harrison actually has some news about a rumor. So do you want to kind of take over on that, Lewis? Or Harrison? Sorry.
Let me... find it real quick. Sorry, we'll have to edit this out. Here it is. To cap off the podcast tonight. Now, there's a rumor floating around that, according to Amazon, there's an update to this right now. Amazon, there was a point that Amazon was suggesting that Mario Kart 8 would be coming out before May 30th. And this was done because this was found out through a couple of members of the NeoGAF forums that they're reporting that was Amazon was like beginning to send out emails that Mario Kart 8 is coming out sometime before May 30th, mentioning how the retailer said that they would expect the game between April 6th or April 19th, or no, April 16th or April 19th, and that many just believe that this was going to be pushed somewhere between next month. Also, Amazon found a bit confident in the new date. Now, there's an update to this that Nintendo had refuted the Amazon statement and has said that the launch date of Mario Kart 8 has not changed, so I believe that kind of cancels out our whole idea of discussing if this was going to come out before then. But we can always ask when we're going to get another trailer for this or another update on features.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually a bit curious. I mean, currently Europe has a kind of a promotion or a separate SKU, which is a Mario Kart 8 and a Blue Shell trophy. Is that same bundle coming out in America?
I believe not.
That's quite strange. I mean, yeah, it comes in a box which looks like it's a similar size to kind of that Wind Waker Deluxe set, which with the Ganondorf figure. But like a Mario edition with a blue shell instead of a Ganondorf, as it were. And it looks pretty cool, and it's not much more than the standard version of the game, and it's definitely looks a lot better than a plastic steering wheel. But yeah, I mean, I was just going over just kind of the description of the game, and it brought up a term which I remember being used, I think, when the game was originally announced, but they haven't mentioned it since, which is something called Mario Kart TV. Does anyone remember this?
I think I do briefly remember this, where you would be able to share videos of your races.
Yeah, and it would, like, yeah, you would share videos over Miiverse. And so I assume this is going to be some sort of Miiverse update, which is going to let you not only submit screenshots, but videos as well. And obviously play them, I assume, through Miiverse, or maybe you could just have to do it through Mario Kart itself to view that. But I would like to see just some more details on that, or if there's going to be any other kind of actual features which they're waiting to announce. But then again, the fact that we do kind of have these official, almost bullet points describing what's in the game, maybe there won't be any huge surprises now.
Yeah, we don't even know how online's going to be detailed with this, though.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah, hopefully they will have some extra enhancements to the Wii U Online.
I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if they decide not to implement online in this. I mean, I know it's highly unlikely, but if that ever did happen, I think that would change my opinion of even picking this game up.
Oh, it definitely does have online to some capacity. It has up to 12-player online competitive play, but how you connect to that, what the actual modes or the features are within that, we have no idea. I've just got this bullet point here which says 12-player online competitive play, which is good to know, but I'm hoping they add some things in, like on the 3DS Mario Kart 7, where you can obviously join someone's game when you're not playing it, if you've got it downloaded, and those cool little bits like that. But hopefully we will see those sort of things, because Mario Kart Wii did have some good online modes or components, especially considering the other Wii Online titles it kind of sat alongside. So hopefully Nintendo also use this to kind of showcase what they can do with online on the Wii U.
Well, I think that's exactly what Mario Kart 7 did for the 3DS. I think that even to this day, Mario Kart 7 is the best online experience for the 3DS. I think it even surpasses Pokemon, which for me is saying something, because I was really impressed with Pokemon as well. But yeah, just thinking about Mario Kart 7 and the precedents that it set, I can't imagine that Mario Kart 8 will have, you know, anywhere near a bad online experience. So that'll be fun. There have actually been rumors, though, that there might be a track editor. And I don't know if those rumors have been, you know, like, squashed by Nintendo at this point or anything.
Did I start those rumors?
Who stopped those?
Because I was always hoping for a track editor, and it was being in more than one of my predictions. But I don't think I've heard it elsewhere.
I think I have, so I don't know. Maybe you did.
Oh, that's good.
You never know. But that would be so cool. I think I would really love that.
And it would make so much sense. I mean, you could draw them on the gamepad as well. You could just, like, kind of sketch them out, and then the track would appear as you're sketching on the TV. And that'd be really cool.
It'd be kind of... I mean, the graphics of the track itself on the TV probably wouldn't be all that grand if you were drawing them, but that would make for interesting...
No, I mean, that would be the cool thing.
Unless there's, like, a world template or something like that, where you're given the template for the world, but you're able to create the track through it. But obviously, I mean, as far as things are in the background, it wouldn't be as great, but I think that they would have a good little template for it.
Yeah. No, I'm sure Nintendo could work it out, but I mean, like, you would be, like, drawing, like, simple black lines, but on the TV it would be creating, like, the terrain you selected beforehand, and just, you know, crafting that in the lines you're drawing. But with the kind of anti-gravity tracks, there would be so many possibilities if they had that track editor in there. Yeah, you could do all these sort of crazy tracks, and you could basically make the game F-Zero if you really wanted it to. Yeah, it would be pretty awesome. But you kind of mentioned about Pokemon's online, and in my opinion, I think the Game Freak titles have the best online modes of any Nintendo titles. And I think they should let them almost like do the either the actual online components for the consoles themselves, or just for some of these cool games. I would love it if just like they had Game Freak, as odd as it may sound, make the online mode for Mario Kart. Because they would have the video chat and the voice chat and all these different ways to kind of connect up to people and share your rankings and all these like little details that they love to put in those Pokemon games. I'm hoping it's good stuff, and I'm hoping this game surprises us with the online mode.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
I think it's a game we're all looking forward to playing online.
Yes. I'm thrilled.
Beyond thrilled would be the exact thing for me to say.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's going to be this or Smash Bros. I'm more excited to play online.
Well, it depends on the quality of the online.
Exactly,
yeah. You mean lag-free Smash Brothers.
Exactly. One can dream.
If I actually had to... Well, if I... I don't know what I'm trying to say. I want them to announce something about, like, item customization for Mario Kart 8, kind of in the vein of the Super Smash Bros. Series, where, you know, you can turn items on and off and stuff, because I hate the
You
want to
turn off the blue shells.
Those blue shells. When you talked about the blue shell bundle that's coming out in Europe, I thought to myself, who wants to display in their home the evilest video game item ever? Period.
Yeah, that was my first thought as well. That was an odd item choice. Why not just put a mushroom in there or something? Or one of the actual, like... I know Club Nintendo was giving these, like... at trophies based off of the actual trophies you win in Mario Kart, but like real versions of them. Like, why they didn't put one of those in instead is beyond me, instead of like, the blue shell. The one thing everyone hates about Mario Kart, collectively.
Let's just say they collectively hated it as more versions have come on, and it's just becoming so... just way overpowered.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, it's notorious. I mean, I can see how it kind of makes sense just because it is notorious. It is iconic. It is evil. It's kind of like a Ganondorf statue, because Ganondorf's evil. The blue shell's evil. Ooh, it's perfect.
That's a very good point.
It's evil. This is what you're getting. It's like, oh, what's my collectible? Everything that's evil about the game.
Yeah, in Nintendo, where deluxe edition means evil edition.
Yeah, I hope that's a trend. That would just be hilarious to me. The evilest thing in the game.
Yeah, I can't wait till the deluxe version of Kirby comes out now. No idea what it will be, but I'm sure they'll have fun inventing it.
Alright, well, I think we've pretty much finished up on that topic. And with that, this podcast has actually come to a close. As always, you can send us questions, comments, anything like that at contact@infendo.com, or you can just leave a comment below the post if you're viewing the podcast in your browser.
Which you can view on the Wii U, by the way.
Yes, that is true. We always have a special Wii U-friendly link that we post in for Infendo Radio. So with that, have a great day or, you know, night, whatever time it is for you guys, and we will be signing off. See you guys.
Later, guys.
See you later. Ooh.